Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Dr. Tom here in the house, and I'm bringing you another fresh off the press episode of The Positivity Effect, number 35, and it is Thursday. How is your week been going, guys? Tell someone close to you today, tell them that you love them, because they definitely deserve it. If you're on Twitter, I'd love to connect with you. My Twitter handle is Tom Retscher. I'd also love to connect on Snapchat. Just search T. Retscher. Today, I have on internationally known motivational speaker and coach again, Gavin Ingham. You can connect with him at gaviningham.com. And he is bringing the heat again for you guys today, teaching us more about sales, authenticity, how to approach failure, breaking bad habits, and even thinking about what does health and vitality look like for him. It's truly an honor to have him on. Here now is Gavin Ingham. Gavin, what's up? Welcome back, man, to The Positivity Effect.
Pleased to be here.
Absolutely. So we ended off yesterday. We were talking about a lot of different things, but I want to kick off today talking about failure. And I want everybody really to pay attention and hear this. I want to ask you this question. Gavin, you know, do you fail?
Yes, of course.
You know, everybody has to hear that. Even when you're somebody that's successful, you have failures, you know, and it's like, I think when we were talking about that yesterday, people don't see the moments when we're behind the scenes and we're grinding and we're trying and we're testing new things. And especially in your business, if we're talking about business, when you're testing new things and, you know, you try something and maybe it doesn't work. So then you pivot, you know, to something else. And it's
sure.
It's interesting to hear that, how, you know, you try something and it doesn't work, but then, you move on to something else.
So I was in my last role. I was a sales and marketing director, and supposedly an expert in sales and an expert in marketing and all of the above. So I set up my own business, and I was doing okay. At the time, I do 90% of what I do. 80% of what I do is speaking at conferences these days. 20% is kind of exec coaching, and then obviously there's the products that I do as well. When I first set out 15 years ago, I did quite a lot of training, specifically sales training, and we ran some open seminars. I probably run one or two a year these days, but back in the day, I used to run quite a few. And I had this great idea, you know, we got to do this big piece of promotion. And I was just starting out, and I knew I could put a few people in a room, but I knew I wouldn't be able to put enough in a room. So I poached somebody who had a list, and I paid this person a huge amount of money for a really great list, because I didn't just want a list of names. I wanted a list of names of people who'd bought almost identical training in the last year. And as you know, that kind of list does not come cheap.
And no, it does not.
No, it does not. They were able to tell me where they come from, etc. And they protect them. You know, the guys who've actually given them the information will veto you if they don't want you to hit the list. And you have to pay for every cent of the list. They don't just give you the details. They loan you the details on a percent. So I committed to 5 cents to this list. And we're talking, this is prior, this is an email, this is post. So we designed flyers, we designed a beautiful piece, we got it all together, we even designed the envelopes, we did everything that we were supposed to do. We created a series of 5 because we accepted, you know, a lot of people are going to reject this first time through, a lot of people are going to reject this second time through because they're not going to know us, but then they're going to gradually get to know us, and by the time we get to 4 and 5, hopefully people will book and hopefully it will happen. So we sent out thousands of these things through the post, thousands of them, 5 times to the same people, all glossy, all really nicely done, all really great. And as I say, this was before really people were getting smashed by email, so it's not like people were really switched off or anything, and these things landed anyway as a result of this huge investment. So we had hot responses to this piece of marketing. Three were to tell us to do one, never contact them again. If we were to contact them, they'd set their big brother on us or something. One was to tell us that the guy was dead and we could retake him off the list. And the final one was to book one person for one ticket, but they rang up and asked, could they do a deal because he may or may not be staying in the company. Yeah, it was brutal, brutal. I mean, you know, and I was a small business owner just starting out, you know, investing my own money, invested a huge amount. I applied every marketing trick of copyright and everything that I knew. And to this day, I cannot explain why that response was so bad. And it would have been very easy to just say, right, that's it, I'm not running seminars anymore. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen. But I had to go back. I had to reinvent it. I had to think about it. I had to get positive again and work out how to move forward. But, you know, these things happen. And failure happens to all of us all the time in personal life, in business life, whatever. There was an interesting thing about failure, though, because I don't celebrate it. I know a lot of people like to kind of go, you know, you should celebrate your failures. I kind of don't do that. You know, I am one of these people. And, you know, I'll be honest, I personally associate more with, I don't know, do you remember, I think it's the competitive element in me, I think. Do you remember the film Chariots of Fire?
Chariots of Fire. I've definitely heard of it, but I've never seen it, actually.
All right. Great, great film. Old film now. Great, great film. It's about the 1924 Olympics, but it's a very, very good film. Harold Abrahams won the 100 meters at the time. British guy beating. Might have been more of a British film, maybe. I don't know. But it's a good film, nonetheless. And early on in his career, Harold Abrahams, who's obsessively competitive, gets beaten. And there's this bit where he's sitting up, and I don't know whether this happened or not, you know, but there's this bit where he's sitting up in the stands till sort of late in the evening after everybody's gone home, and you see the whole stadium empty, and he's still got his head in his hands, and there's this kind of music by Vangelis, I think it is, playing in the background, and he just keeps seeing himself losing over and over and over. And you know, I'm, you know, that is my natural tendency. My natural tendency, because I'm so competitive when I get beaten, is to do that. It's to be like that. And you know, here's the thing. I had to train myself to see it differently. I had to train myself to learn from it. I had to train myself to let it go. I had to train myself to move on. Otherwise, I would be obsessing on it to the nth degree. And I think, therefore, you know, the reason I say that is because some people might be sitting there thinking, oh, well, yeah, it's easy for you to feel like that about failure. But actually, it's not. My way I would do it if I hadn't forced myself to be different would be to obsess about it.
And, you know, for you, like once you, like you said, you had to train and train, and like you couldn't just like turn a light switch on and say, okay, you know, I'm not bothered by these failures. Like it was a lot of time that it took and a lot of mental toughness training. And once you were really able to start to make that shift, you know, how powerful has that been for you where it's more information, you know, I'm sure there's days too where it's not easy, you know, when you fail. Nobody wants to fail, but you're able to take that information, you know?
I also think there's some things people say which aren't particularly useful. So they say things like, don't take it personally, it's just business. And you see, I think business is personal. You know, I'm sure you do. Your podcast, it is personal. It's something you believe. You know, what I do is, it's not just a job. It's my passion. It's my life.
It's who you are.
It's who I am. Yeah. You know, and if I give my all, and then, I mean, and unfortunately, I can't remember the last time this happened, but if somebody came up to me and said, you know, that was rubbish, Gavin, you were rubbish, that was awful, I would be gutted, because it is personal. So I think saying don't take things personally, it's just business, is really, you know, maybe that's how they feel about it. But I think if you're one of these people who struggles with failure, you're never going to feel like that about it. You know, if I fail, I'm always going to feel bad about it, but it's what I then choose to do. It's how I then choose to act. It's what I then choose to put myself on. Sometimes I have to almost consciously do the process. So sometimes it's unconscious, but if it's a big one, sometimes I still have to sort of stop and almost take a break and go, right, change your mind, change your thinking, focus on something else. Here's, and I almost have to sort of set myself off down that route. You know, I think a lot of people stand up, and particularly doing what I do, and they kind of talk as if they're perfect, and like these things never happen to them anymore. And I think there's two things that really are important for me there. One is, what a load of cobblers. That's clearly not true. They're lying to you. And the second you know, for me, and I know you wanted to lead into this, for me, communication, presentation, sales, leadership, it's all about authenticity. And
yes,
if that means sharing a vulnerability, if that means sharing an area where you struggled, then, you know, that's fabulous.
You know, you couldn't have just segued perfectly, because, you know, recently I had on a gentleman, his name is Michael Unks, and he's an aspiring motivational speaker. He's really just budding. He's coming out. He's just jumping out into the world of public speaking. And he shared with me that when he was young, you know, when he first thought about it, it was really in his mind, it was like the fear of, you know, people are going to laugh you off stage, or, you know, people aren't going to believe in your message. And then what he realized before he actually got up to his first ever time speaking in front of a group of people, mentally, he came from such a place of gratitude, from such a place of that he is just was so thankful that someone had finally said yes to get him up on stage, that when he was up there, he was like, I am just going to provide value. I am not looking to take anything in return. Like, there was just this, like, thank you so much in his mind for being there. And literally, the response was fantastic, you know, because it was like, I'm here to provide value. And I think it's just so important what you said about that.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. One of the challenges, and I don't know whether this is a problem in the US as such, but I suspect it is. But certainly it's a problem in the UK and with European speakers. People want to get into the industry. And I'm using, because people might be sitting out there thinking, hey, hang on a minute, this isn't about motivational speaking, but this is about connection, communication, really.
Right.
They say to them, hey, look, this is how you need to do it. This is how you need to present. This is how you need to put yourself across. And you end up with, you know, 50 speakers, and you can see that they all went to a certain place to learn in a certain way. And you're kind of like, well, that's bonkers, because that's not what people connect with. You know, I always say when you're communicating, and I think it's true in any industry, this, that if you want to stand out, you've got to be authentic. And if you want to be authentic, you've got to accept that not everybody will like your authenticity. You know, so you'll get a bunch of people who love you, a bunch of people who really don't, and a bunch of people in the middle who quite like you, but are also a little bit indifferent and never going to do anything for you. And I think if you try and change those figures too much, what happens is you just don't have anybody who loves you. And if you don't have anybody who loves you, you don't have anybody you really connect with, then you're going to struggle in any communication, in any leadership, in any business. And when I look at communication and how you communicate and what you communicate, a lot of people are just scared. They are scared of sharing that personal issue. They're scared of sharing that vulnerability. So I see leaders who are scared to share that they're not perfect. I see salespeople who are scared to share that they don't have the answer to everything. I see speakers who are scared to admit that they ever struggled with anything. And when you do admit that struggle, not some struggle that happened 30 years ago when you got over it, but some struggle that you had yesterday, some struggle that you had last week, some struggle that happened, you know, recently, because you're a real person who's living now, not living 30 years ago, when you're prepared to do that, people communicate with you, and people listen to you, and people engage with you. I love food, and it's a long story, this one, which I'm not going to share all of it now, but the bottom line was I ended up overweight, you know, not like, you know, 400 pounds or anything like that, but, you know, a goodly amount overweight. And I went out about 2 years ago and said to my client base, look, hey, I'm overweight. I'm a motivational speaker. And I wrote an article. You can find it on my website.
It was probably your energy levels too, right? Like, not even, like you said, it wasn't just about the weight, just from probably the way you were eating, what it was doing to your mind.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. All of the above. Yeah. And so I said I was going to do something about it. And I sort of did. And I sort of didn't. And I sort of did. And I sort of didn't. And I lost a bit, but not enough. And I never really got anywhere. And I mean, it's a long story, this one. But the bottom line is that I finally, last June, something snapped, something happened. I did something about it, and it's now part of my life, and I feel lots better, and I've lost a lot of weight. But, And this is the point that I'm making today. It's not really about the weight. The point is that I share that story with people in detail. The point is that I share with them that despite the fact that I'm a motivational speaker, despite the fact that I talk about mental toughness, because my focus was elsewhere, because my focus was on other things, and these aren't excuses, these are just what happened, I didn't do anything about it. I try to use willpower, and willpower is no way to break a habit. You've got to use habits to break habits. And I just didn't put the time in to make it a habit. So I was constantly wrestling with, should I eat that pie or shouldn't I eat that pie? Should I eat that donut or shouldn't I eat that donut? And that's no way to, you know, that's no way. If you've got a healthy appetite and you love stuff like that, you're never going to win that way. You've got to create new habits. But the point is that I wrestled with this for best part of 2 years, and I'm a mental toughness speaker. And it was hard. And when I have that conversation and I explain it in more detail to people and I explain how it happened and how I got over it, I get people who come up to me afterwards and they say, I've had exactly the same issue. I've never had anybody come up to me and say, you talk about mental toughness, are you flipping joking? You couldn't even lose weight yourself. I've never. All right. And I'm not saying I'm not saying that there's nobody out there who doesn't think that. There might be. But that's not the response I get. Because it's about the authenticity, and it's that authenticity, it's that vulnerability, it's that connection, it's that preparing to be yourself out there that allows you to connect, engage, and add value for people. And it's that that people buy into, and it's that that people, you know, want to have something with you. And when I look back and go, why was I good at sales? Why was I good as a sales, you know, team leader, as a manager, as a sales director? Same reason, I connected and was honest and open with my team.
Gavin, I love that. What you said, you have to create habits to break habits. That is like, you know, we could just jump off the interview right now. Like, and if anybody just gets that, that's like so powerful, man.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what you have to do. You can't, like when you said you tried to start out with just willpower, and if you just use willpower, it's, you know, you're going to end up failing over and over. You have to start to implement. So what were some of these practices that got you to the point, you know, point B, where you are now, from where you started with your health?
Oh, with weight. What do you mean, the sort of aha horrible moment or the actual practices?
Yeah, what were some of these practices that, you know, that you realized, okay, I have to implement these things, because if I don't, I'm going to keep falling backwards?
Yeah, well, the first thing I did was I looked at it and I said, well, what are the elements of health to me? Because I think historically, when I look back, going back to being sort of 15, 16, 17, 18, I used to run for school, for county, etc. I was a very good runner. And so for me, fitness was intrinsically linked with running. And actually, when you look at it as someone 47, you know, I'm 48 this year, when you look at it in relation to that, actually running, not really. It's not about running 10 miles a day or running 400 yards in whatever time, you know. So you start looking at it and you go, okay, so it breaks up into various different things. You know, you've got strength. You know, you've got speed, you've got stamina, you've got sleep, you've got sustenance, you know. So you've got, you know, one that I called, just to keep it on an S, one that I called serenity, you know. So I just kind of broke down what I thought the elements of being healthy were and what that meant for me. And then what I did was I set myself goals in each of those areas and then broke that down into specific habits so that I would do those habits first. So just to take one example around food. I realized that if I have food in the house, or if I travel without any plans as to what I'm going to eat, then when somebody, you know, I'll be running a seminar or something like that, and I'll do my hour at the conference, and I'll come off, and somebody will say, hey, Gavin, you know, come on, we're going for dinner. And you'll go for dinner, and it's all laid out, and it's a buffet. And, you know, I can sit there, and my willpower can go, don't eat too much. But my body will do something entirely different unless I build a different habit. So for me, it was a case of looking at all the different scenarios and going, what am I going to do in that scenario? And then focusing on making that happen. So for me, food-wise, it was working out what I wanted to eat, when I wanted to eat it, how I got through certain situations, and then focusing on that. But it was also stripping out all of the things which would distract me from that habit. So for example, for that period of time, when I was building those habits, it was like to my wife, right, listen, seriously, we can't have chocolate biscuits in this house just for the moment. You know, please don't bring cakes back. If you and the kids have cakes, eat those.
Please do not buy them.
Please do not bring them in the house while I'm building the habit, because I want to build the habit. And once I've done that, and you know, now I can cook a cake for the kids and, you know, or buy a cake for the kids and sit there and I'll have a coffee and they'll have cake and it's fine. Likewise with fitness, it was a case of working out. Okay, so in my head, fitness looks like an hour and a half a day, you know, sprint training, running training, weight training, and I'm 47. You know, seriously, how long am I going to keep doing that? And does that serve any purpose? I have no intention of running a competitive race anymore. So it was a case of working out, right, what is exercise for me? What exercise should I be doing? How much time should I be spending? And then putting it into my, putting it into my diary. I have a take on this though. And I think probably it's a longer conversation, but I can cover it very, very quickly now. I think the issue is that people try and do too much.
And I
think people come to, you know, January the 1st and go, you know, because people go, goals don't work. And I know goals don't, it's not the goals don't work. It's not the New Year's resolutions don't work. It's the people don't work, you know. Right.
They look at the gurus and think that they're going to have by day one the exact same plan, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely, and this is flexible, but I genuinely think that most people are, you know, can probably set two or three big goals for a year. And I think anything else, and it starts crashing down on itself, it's too much. Because if you look at each of those goals probably needs two or three specific actions. So, for example, one of my goals around health was to feel what I call a 10, which is to get up every day and feel great, was to weigh a specific weight, was to exercise, and was to eat healthy. So that was it. So then you go, okay, so what are the kind of the, you know, the activities or the focus points, if you like, that I've got to focus on? Well, I need a daily healthy eating habit. I need to relax every day, and I need to exercise 5 days a week. And I broke that down. But you start doing that and going, okay, I've got a similar thing across work, and I've got a similar thing involving my wife and children. That's quite a lot of activities that you're building into your life. So you've got to be very, very careful when you set these things that you decide. I mean, it's quite simple for people out there. What is important to you? What is really important to you? What do you really want in your life? What two or three things are really important? Now set a goal for each of those. Now work out what you have to do on a daily basis for each of those and keep doing it till it becomes a habit. And that is a massively simplified version of what of what I talk about. But in essence, that is the simplicity of it. What you do, and it's like we talked about yesterday, what you do on a day-to-day basis makes a massive, massive difference. You know, I have a friend who wants to lose weight at the moment, and he's a speaker, and we were talking about it. And while we were talking about it, we were in a cab journey across London, we were talking about it, and we stopped to take some photos for our respective, you know, respective things. We just wanted to get a couple of bits of film. And as we stopped, we did these like 60 seconds of film each. I had 60 seconds of him. He took 60 seconds of me. And then he turned and he went, oh, wow, a pancake stall.
Just like instant state change.
Yeah, seriously. And he ate a pancake, right? But he didn't just eat a pancake. He ate a pancake with chocolate and marshmallows on it. And, you know, not even just a pancake with lemon and sugar, but a pancake with chocolate and marshmallows.
Oh my gosh.
And I was thinking, did we just have that conversation in the car?
Like 30 seconds prior.
Yeah, right. But the point being, you see, you can talk about these things all you like, but the question is it really, really important to you? And I look at this guy's posts, you know, I look at this guy, and at the moment, you know, I see posts from him, and his posts are about, you know, I'm traveling here, I'm traveling there, I've just had this brandy, I've just had a piece of cake, you know, I've just done this, I've just been upgraded, oh, check this meal out, whatever. And he deliberately or undeliberately or whatever is running on a different set of values at the moment. And I don't know what they are, but that health value is not up there for him at the moment. It's not important to him, or he's not acting like it's important to him. And this is what's the critical piece when you talk about changing habits. You've got to decide what's important to you first, because you will never change a habit, or you'll struggle to change a habit around something that's not important. Hell, it's hard enough when it's important, but you've got to really work out what is important, set the goals, work out what you've got to do those, and then work out how you're going to make that happen every day until it becomes habit. And how long does that take? As long as it takes. I mean, I sometimes have this thing I talk about, 100-day habit. For some, it's 100 days. For some, it's more. For some, it's less. But you got to just keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it until it becomes habit.
So powerful, man. You know, I just want to like recap that. It's like, you know, guys, please definitely go look back and listen to that little bit. Like, there's just so much value in that little thing, everything you just said, Gavin, and how that, you know, we have to really, when we're trying to change something, you got to really think about, you have to think of these things and write them down. And, you know, you have to build systems into your life and remove the distractions. But I guess I think for me, the big key takeaway was that it's that purpose. Like if you sit down and write that you want to lose some weight or you want to, you know, get a new job, something, whatever that thing, if that's not who you are and it's not your purpose and it's not your core being of the change you want, then you're really going to you know, slip up, even if you have the systems in place. So I think that was key. That was powerful that you said that.
We take a simple example. Loads of people say, I don't have any time. And then you watch them and they probably spend an hour a day or more checking their phone 15 times an hour, you know, in their email and Facebook. I mean, you see them on the plane, don't you? You know, the plane lands and the whole plane turns their phone on and starts furiously swiping at their phone. And it's only like a 45-minute hop. And you're like, what the heck do you think has happened?
It's like, we're all zombies. We're all zombies.
One of you might be waiting for a baby, but you look like you've got nothing going on in your life, you know?
it's like zombies on the plane, you know?
Yeah, well, I sat next to a guy on a plane the other day, and he was on his text and that, and he was on it until the last minute, and they said, look, you've got to turn him off. And the air stewardess actually came walking down and she said to him, get your phone off. And he looked so offended that he had to turn his phone off, you know. But eventually he turned his phone off. But here's the thing. He kept flicking through Facebook whole journey. And I'm like, hell, that's the cached bit. That's pages you've already looked at, you know. And he was flicking through his email and flipping through his text for an hour and a half. And I just wanted to say to him, put it down and read a book, you know, put it down and watch a film, put it down and
get some
and
new
do
information.
Something.
Yeah. Some new, yeah. Some new stimulus.
But you see, here's the thing. Most people have a habit of checking their email regularly. Most people have a habit of checking Facebook every however often, and breaking that, believe me, is so, so hard. So you've got to decide, is it important to you? What is important to you? Prioritize something else in, but then you've got to create a schedule for how you're going to use these things, because otherwise and then you've got to force yourself to not use them. You know, if you look at some of the most productive people in the world, the way they use email, stroke, you know, social media, etc., is, you know, is incredibly limited. I mean, if anybody's read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, you know, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said something like he's outsourced the whole of his email to someone else who he's taught how to handle it. And I think once a week they send him like a summary of anything that he might potentially need to know. I'm pretty
important
sure that
things,
was what he
yeah,
said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, even me, right, who's feels like I'm in control of it, when I think about that, that feels really uncomfortable. What does that mean? That means it's outside my comfort zone. What does that mean? It's miles away from the habits that I've got. So compared to him, and I'm not saying everybody could do that, right? But compared to him, email is eating up a lot more of my time than him. But then probably compared to 95% of the population, you know, I've got it in hand. Why? Because I realized how much time I was spending wandering around in there. But it's a case of taking control, deciding what the action is and building it in as a habit. But I go back to, you've got to decide what's important to you, because trying to build habits around stuff that's not that important to you is always going to be difficult.
Yes, yes. And Kevin, man, we could do like a whole series of shows just talking about social media and the way it impacts our lives, business and personal. But, you know, we're at the end, and I give this opportunity to all my guests, and it's my last question. I'd love for you to answer. Kevin, if you were suddenly at the end of your life and you're reflecting on all that you've been through, all that you've created, what kind of impact would you want to be remembered for?
It would actually be a very, it would be a very different one then to what we've talked about so far. For me, it would have been to have been the best father and husband that I could possibly have been, and that my kids would feel that, you know, I had been there for them, loved them, supported them, helped them, become the people that they were. For me, you know, it would be about my children before everything else.
So powerful, so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And Gavin, I've been so much fun and inspired just sharing this this time with you today. And I definitely can say that everybody's been inspired as well by your message and your positivity, man.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure. We always go all over the place in our conversations, and it amuses me a lot. So thank you for inviting me along.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And our audience, they're well aware they can find everything at positivityeffect.com. Just put Gavin's name right in the search bar. And guys, as well, check out what Gavin's doing. Just go to gaviningham.com. So thank you so much, man. You've been so generous with your time, and it's really been awesome to connect. Take care, man.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests every single day. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency, compassion, and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. If you're really enjoying The Positivity Effect, please tell someone about the show. Together, we can create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world, something that we need so desperately today. So thanks again so much for listening. See you tomorrow for another episode of The Positivity Effect.